Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, November 29th, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Farmers Anxious to See Details of Final Farm Bill. Davis says bipartisan deal top priority may be finished this week. By Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. The new farm bill should be finalized any day now, and Central Illinois farmers are ready to see what, if any, changes are in store. We're anxious to see it finally be done and have a chance to look at the final version, but everything we have heard so far seems to be acceptable, said Fred Greeter, a corn and soybean farmer near Carlock, who also is president of the Bloomington-based McLean County Farm Bureau. The current farm bill officially expired in September, but the legislation is based upon the crop year and not the federal fiscal year that ended September 30th. All programs in place from the current farm bill will remain in place until a new one is signed. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville, told the Pantograph the deal is the top priority for lawmakers and could be finalized this week. I think it will be a good bipartisan deal, Davis said, as he and other lawmakers returned to Washington from the holiday break. Agriculture producers will breathe a sigh of relief once the bill is signed, sealed, and delivered, agreed Mike Stacy, president of the Macon County Farm Bureau, who farms in the western part of that county. Most farmers are anxious to get it done so we know where we stand and what's in it, he said. Farmers should be concerned because it does affect us. There are items such as waterways, and so different farmers are concerned about different things. But we feel good about what we have heard so far. Both the Senate and the House have put forward draft farm bills, and key leaders report the two sides appear to have reached agreement on most issues. However, federal forest management policies have emerged as the latest snag in the talks, including safeguards needed to limit logging on public lands that could destroy forest habitats and reduce protections for endangered wildlife. The Farm Bill is the primary agricultural and food policy tool of the federal government. The bill is renewed every 5 years, and in addition to agriculture, also supports the federally funded Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. Davis thinks leaders are near a final draft and agreements for most of the major items, such as the SNAP program, are in place. There is a desire to get it done before it gets shoved into a continuing resolution status, said Adam Nielsen, director of national legislation for the Bloomington-based Illinois Farm Bureau. The government shutdown issue will come to a head at the end of next week, so that's the timetable they are looking at. The desire is to get it done before it gets consumed by the appropriations battle. In September, lawmakers approved a temporary funding bill to keep the government funded through at least December 7th. Lawmakers would like to approve the farm bill prior to that deadline. In the past, when they have run up against the deadline, they have extended the current bill, and we see that as acceptable at this point, Greeter said. Like others, Stacy said he has heard of no major changes to current programs. Realistically, we haven't received much payment from the farm programs, and I think most farmers are happy that we don't have to rely on the government for those, he said. We would rather get our profits or losses from the market itself. Most experts say there is not much difference between the current draft and the standing farm bill, which at the time was viewed as a victory for Central Illinois farmers. I would say that I am about 80 to 90% confident that we are going to get this bill done and have it something we can work with, said Rodney Weinzierl, executive director of the Bloomington-based Illinois Corn Association. The biggest issue is the time element, and it looks like the last issue is the forest management issue. The safety net for farmers is agreeable, and the conservation and SNAP program seem to have agreements. I think there are just a final few holdups with the forest management issue, and then we can have something to read. The next story is entitled, Normal Public Library Starts Fund for New Building or Expansion, by Derek Bay. Normal. Normal Public Library's long journey to a new building or expansion took another big step Wednesday. After studying a new library that could cost $40 million and an expansion estimated at no less than $14 million, board members established a fund that will set aside future budget surpluses for such a project. The motivation is to take a positive step to create the fund and see it grow over time, said Library Director Brian Chase. We don't expect it to grow by enormous amounts anytime soon. It's more of, if we have some revenue left over, this is a use for that money that moves us in the right direction. Though officials don't know yet what will be deposited into that account in surpluses, it could start with about $1.2 million in retirement benefit money that many municipal bodies no longer set aside. The library has $2.1 million in reserve for benefits that are not pensions, such as retiree health insurance, and spends about $40,000 per year. The town keeps no such reserves and operates on a pay-as-you-go basis. I would never recommend the library board hold $2 million in reserves for a liability you're going to pay at $40,000 per year that's going to go down, Normal Finance Director Andrew Hune told the board. What's the responsibility to fund it versus what's the responsibility to build a new library or improve this one? It's a push-pull, but I think 50% is a good start. Chase said Wednesday's action was about establishing the fund and a preliminary goal, $4 million or 10% of what a new building might cost, and discussions will continue next month on how much benefit money is moved there to start it up. He noted the library's levy won't increase for 2019 despite the building needs. Chase said after the meeting that's because the library doesn't look to fund capital needs with property taxes. Previously, budget surpluses stayed in the library's operating fund and carried over to the next year. We typically spend 95% approximately of our total budget, so we end up with a couple $100,000 surplus, said board member Terry Lindberg. If we set this at $4 million and we've got $1.185 million that goes into it, without any other actions, it'll take us a while to get there. The move comes as the Normal Public Library Foundation, a nonprofit organization that raises money for library needs, kicks off its first annual campaign. Leaders hope to raise $50,000, raise awareness, and lay the groundwork for bigger campaigns that would help fund a building. If it's a $40 million project, which, by the way, gets more expensive every day we're not doing it, we have plenty of cash to put it on paper and get to the construction part, said Chase. It puts us in a position where we don't have to wait for anything if an opportunity arises. The next story is entitled, This Year's Leaf Pickup, A Real Challenge in Twin Cities, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Leaf collection in Bloomington and Normal has been delayed by a fickle Mother Nature, and now public works crews are trying to catch up while remaining ready to plow snow from streets. The city typically has 3,800 cubic yards of leaves collected by this time of the year, but we have actually collected only 1,800 cubic yards at this point, Bloomington Public Works Director Jim Karch said Wednesday. So we are under half of where we typically are this time of year. I can't tell you cubic yards-wise, but I think we are in about the same situation, said Normal Public Works Director Wayne Aldridge. We have 5 zones, and we're not in Zone 4 yet. Typically, we cycle through all 5 zones 3 times or more. The setback stems from leaves dropping their leaves later than usual. In fact, quite a few still have leaves on them, in addition to a cold weather snap and snow. Our employees have been working really hard to try to keep up with that additional need this year because it all came at once, said Karch. The freezing temperatures also make leaf vac collection significantly less efficient. The city of Bloomington started leaf vacuuming November 5th, and the first snowfall was on November 12th, Karch noted. It's been a real challenge. Every time it snows, or even if there is a threat of a snow, our crews have to suspend leaf collection because snow removal is the highest priority for our crews, said Karch. We have 4 to 5 trucks outfitted for leaf removal, and these are our big salt trucks and our big plow trucks as well, said Aldridge. Because we have had several snow events, we had to suspend leaf operations and put plows on the vehicles. Bloomington also uses the same equipment that collects leaves for snow removal. Because of several snow interruptions already this season, Karch anticipates it will take city crews at least 2 more weeks to complete its first collection of leaves for the entire city. As weather permits, Public Works crews will continue to use leaf vacuums to collect piles of leaves. Maps showing their progress are available on websites for both the city, www.cityblm.org, and town, www.normal.org. We're out there now doing what we can do, but once we get snow and ice on the leaves, we're limited by the vacuums that we use, said Aldridge. Our hope is to move as fast as possible and get what we can. Hopefully, the weather gets better and we can cycle back again. The Bloomington Public Works Department budget typically factors in 4 days of overtime to complete the major fall leaf collection, said Karch. We have added an additional day of overtime this year, said Karch. We're even working this Saturday and Sunday for leaf collection to try and get caught up the best we can. Temporary employees make up most of leaf collection crew in Normal, so typically overtime isn't an issue, said Aldridge. If the weather cooperates, leaf collection crews could be working Saturday and Sunday in Normal as well, said Aldridge. Full-time city employees working those days could be paid overtime, and we've got the budget for that, he added. Here's a story headlined, Man Sentenced in Dog Deaths. Normal resident says he was clueless that actions were criminal. By Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A Normal man has been sentenced to 24 months on conditional discharge for aggravated animal cruelty in the deaths of 2 dogs a year ago. Gary J. Eustace was charged in December 2017 with killing 2 dogs by enclosing them in a garage while a vehicle was running. A charge of littering for dumping the dead animals along Twin Grove Road west of Bloomington was dismissed in September. Police became involved when a witness took a photo of a vehicle as it sped away after the driver dumped the bodies of the animals. Eustace, 72, pleaded guilty Tuesday to 2 counts of aggravated cruelty to animals, a Class 4 felony. 2 counts accusing him of euthanizing companion animals were dismissed. In a statement to Judge Casey Costigan at his sentencing hearing, Eustace apologized for his decision to kill the animals that he said were left with his family. Eustace said his actions were taken not with malice, a fit of anger, or for sport. Instead, Eustace said he wanted to save the cost of having the dogs legally euthanized by a vet, according to his statement. The defendant said he was clueless that his actions were criminal. The judge acknowledged Eustace's long history of dog ownership, including his volunteer work with taking therapy dogs to nursing homes. He also noted reports of the advanced age and aggressive nature of the dogs. The sentence of conditional discharge and 200 hours of community service with an organization that helps animals was necessary to deter others from harming animals, said the judge. The next article is entitled, 17 Years for Armed Habitual Criminal, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A man charged with being an armed habitual criminal during what his mother called a love story that went wrong was sentenced Wednesday to 17 years in prison. Nathandre Campbell, 45, of Bloomington, was convicted of possessing a loaded firearm in connection with a September 2016 incident at a motel in Normal. Campbell's criminal history includes home invasion, armed robbery, and residential burglary, offenses that bar him from possessing a firearm. According to police, Campbell was in a room at Motel 6 with a woman when her husband came to the door. While she was outside speaking to him, Campbell approached the man with a loaded handgun and threatened to shoot him, police said. Normal police later located the handgun hidden behind ceiling tiles in the bathroom of the motel room. Campbell initially denied having a gun, but after it was found, he said the weapon was his. During his trial, Campbell testified that he lied to police to protect the woman. The defendant's mother, Charletha Morgan, testified that Campbell was the eldest of her five children and acted as a caregiver to his siblings while she worked. "I'm not going to give up on my child," Morgan told Judge Scott Drzewski. "The incident involving the gun was a love story that went wrong," said Morgan, "and took place during a time Campbell was involved with the married woman." Assistant State's Attorney David Spence asked for a 25-year sentence, calling Campbell a threat to society, an individual society better keep out of everybody's way. The prosecutor noted that Campbell has spent 19 years of his life in custody, including a 15-year stint in the Department of Corrections that ended in 2014. The defendant built a criminal record of 12 felonies starting in 1992. Defense lawyer Philip Finnegan sought the minimum sentence of 6 years. "Campbell has physical and mental health issues," said Finnegan. "Campbell also has children and grandchildren who would benefit from him being released sooner rather than later," said Finnegan. In a lengthy statement to the judge, Campbell recounted a challenging childhood growing up in Chicago. He witnessed violence against his mother by a man who turned his anger toward Campbell after he tried to protect his mother. "I'm not running from my past," said Campbell, acknowledging that he has a problem of being around the wrong people who aggravate my temper. Campbell asked the judge for a second chance. "I'm done being the person people think I am. I'm not a menace to society," he said. In remarks ahead of imposing the sentence, Drzewski expressed compassion for the hardships Campbell endured as a child. "Those experiences helped form him into the multidimensional person he is today," said the judge. "But many people face trauma and adversity in their lives and do not become criminals," said Drzewski. "You are a person who made bad choices and decisions in your life," said the judge. Campbell looked toward the large group of family and friends in the courtroom after the hearing, before he lowered his head on the defense table. Finnegan said he will file an appeal on Campbell's behalf. Here's a story entitled, "Upgrades Shine at ISU Planetarium." Director, "Refurbished Space Like Being on Bridge of Enterprise," by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Thomas Wilmich isn't Captain Kirk or Captain Picard. He is the head of the Illinois State University Planetarium. But Wilmich says sitting at the control panel in the refurbished planetarium is like being on the bridge of the Enterprise. There are 5 computers controlling all the gizmos, and Wilmich said he is still figuring it all out. Visitors attending the Season of Light holiday program, which begins Friday night, will notice the difference right away if they've been to the planetarium before. Gone is the circular bench seating, replaced by comfortable seats that all face the front, but also lean back to better see the cosmos displayed across the ceiling. With the old bench seating, about 90 people could fit with a mixture of adults and children. The new individual seats reduced the capacity to 61, but what was lost in capacity was gained in state-of-the-art capabilities, said Wilmich. Besides, there was always a sweet spot with the in-the-round seating, and some seats were roped off because they had a poor view, he explained. Wilmich said his favorite things about the remodeled space is being able to present the stars as never before. The star projector is a Spitz A3P, but Wilmich said it's more of a hybrid that has been Frankensteined with upgraded parts. It can project 23,054 stars, and the new elevation and motor system moves much faster than the old one and much more quietly. There's also a new surround sound system and full dome projection. The walls have been covered with fabric to improve acoustics. The star projector is now mounted on a rotating platform with laser-etched depiction of zodiac symbols. When the projector rotates to move the viewer's perspective from north to south, it doesn't feel like the projector is moving, said Wilmich. It feels like the room is moving. Being able to smoothly rotate the sky became necessary with the switch from seats that encircled the room to a forward-facing alignment. That was one of the challenges of the remodeling project. I was sitting on an overturned bucket while I was trying to figure this out, said Wilmich. Then Mark Perkins of Free Fall Technologies in Michigan, who was working on the project, said, "I can do that for you," and came up with a custom turntable. The new seating arrangement, more space at the front of the room, and the addition of a smart board with internet capabilities also has made the planetarium more suitable for classes and other presentations, including musical programs. An ISU astronomy class meets regularly in the planetarium. That's the idea, to make it more versatile, he said. The planetarium sold out every show of the recent Ghostly Tales Under the Stars, in which storytellers from the improv mafia told spooky tales under a dome of stars. The upcoming Season of Light will be shown in a full dome format, said Wilmich. It's our traditional holiday show that covers various cultures and what they feared and celebrated around the winter solstice, he explained. This includes practices of the Romans, Norse, Celts, and Hopi, along with Christian and Jewish traditions, and the origins and evolution of the Christmas tree and Santa Claus. There's a little bit of something for everyone, said Wilmich. The project also included upgraded wiring in the more than half-century-old planetarium, located under the White Dome at the eastern end of the Felmley Hall of Science Annex. And a sidebar tells us, if you go, what? Season of Light Holiday Show. When? 7:30 p.m. Fridays, 2 and 7 p.m. Saturdays, from Friday to December 15th. Where? ISU Planetarium, Felmley Hall of Science Annex, College Avenue and School Street, Normal. Admission, adults, $4. Children 5 to 12 and seniors, $3. Children 3 to 4, $2. The next story is headlined, Response to Lincoln Water Emergency Praised, by Kevin Barlow. Lincoln. A boil order for Lincoln residents has been lifted, but when a Sunday afternoon lightning strike hit the water plant in Lincoln, Logan County Emergency Agency Director Dan Fulcher thought the worst. It sounded like an atomic bomb went off, he told the Pantograph. I thought we were at war. It shook the whole town. The lightning strike did plenty of damage to the main pumping facility of Illinois American Water, just hours ahead of a blizzard that crippled much of western and northern Illinois. You never see a tornado warning and a blizzard warning on the same map, but we had that Sunday, said Fulcher. Water company spokeswoman Karen Cotton said the strike caused the system to lose pressure at two well sites. Several motors and pumps had to be replaced. I received a call from Fire Chief Mark Miller that the entire town was going to lose water, and we had about 1 hour, said Fulcher. The prediction was exactly right. The town's emergency water plan went into effect. Abraham Lincoln Memorial Hospital was the main concern, and the Ardagh Glass Company needed water to cool materials. Water was shuttled to the two locations from Lincoln Lakes by the Lincoln Fire Department. The department stored about 10,000 gallons of water in case of emergency, and area fire departments were informed of the situation and told, in case of a working fire, assistance and water would be a top priority. Both Logan Correctional Center and the Lincoln Correctional Center share a potable water system and are not on the Illinois American Water System. Illinois American Water was terrific, Fulcher said. They worked tirelessly to fix the problem as quickly as possible. You can't help something like that. It just happened. But they took immediate action, and everyone has been very impressed with the response. It was just an amazing cooperative effort on everyone's part, Fulcher added. The water company also furnished more than 20,000 bottles of water to local hospitals, care facilities, schools, and agencies. A boil order, in effect since Sunday night, was lifted early Wednesday, and wells owned by Illinois American Water are being replenished. Water restrictions should no longer be necessary by Thursday morning. Water quality tests have confirmed the water continues to meet all U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Safe Drinking Water Act standards and regulations, the company said in a statement on Wednesday. It is no longer necessary for customers to boil their water before drinking or cooking. Here's an item entitled, Fire Displaces Apartment Residents, by Kevin Barlow. Normal. Several residents of a Normal apartment complex were relocated after an electrical fire Wednesday morning. The Normal Fire Department was called about 9:15 a.m. to 1249 Hovey Avenue and prevented the spread of the fire, which appeared to start at an outdoor electrical box, into the building. Electrical service was disconnected, and all tenants in the five attached townhouse apartments were relocated by First Site. First Site officials declined to comment on how many residents were affected or where they were relocated. The cause of the fire is under investigation, and a cause has not yet been determined. And here's a story from today's Daily Digest entitled, Events to Mark World AIDS Day. Bloomington. World AIDS Day is Saturday, and the McLean County Health Department invites the community to several public events this week. A tree lighting event will be at 5 p.m. Friday at Hy-Vee, 1403 North Veterans Parkway, Bloomington, to remember people touched by the disease. After the tree lighting, beginning at 6 p.m., representatives of the Health Department will be at The Bistro, 316 North Main Street, Bloomington, with information about HIV services, support, and resources. A candlelight vigil will be at 5 p.m. Saturday at Uptown Circle, Normal. Following the vigil, the Health Department will provide information about HIV services and other health resources at University Galleries of Illinois State University, 11 Uptown Circle. Positive Health Solutions, Central Illinois Friends, and Prairie Pride Coalition are among partners in the observances. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for November 29th. Please stay tuned.